Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk, episode 35. Well, it's the first episode of spring 2017. A lot of you have started to experience some warmer weather already, and for some of you that's exciting. Some of you maybe not so exciting that enjoy the colder weather. But regardless, it is springtime here in North America, and that's exciting because. And a little bit weird because that means 2017 is already a quarter of the way over. This is a special episode of the DCT podcast because it's a little bit different. They're actually taking kind of a page out of our friends at the crowdfunding Christian music show. Garrett Godfrey does a great job on that show, but we decided we were going to cover a project that is near and dear to my heart, and I talked about it a little bit on the last episode. It's a Pledge Music campaign surrounding the celebration of the life of Rich Mullins. Rich is a guy that, you know, he's somebody that I grew up with. He's somebody that I continue to listen to today, and he's somebody that was taken away from us too early. But his writings, you know, still stand the test of time. So I asked some friends to join me on this podcast just to kind of talk about the project and then talk about, you know, their memories with Rich. And for later on in this show, we're going to talk with Jimmy Abag, who actually played in the Ragamuffin Band with Rich Mullins. Some of you may know him from the Steve Taylor and the Perfect Foil. But, you know, before that, he played with Rich Mullins, and he has quite an interesting perspective. He's a guy that got to travel with Rich on the road and play music with him. And another guy I talked to on this show later on will be Derek Webb. For some of you that listened to CCM music in the late 90s, he was part of the group Caveman's Call. He's done a lot of solo stuff since. And he's kind of a guy that his career has kind of been tied with Rich Mullins. You know, Caveman's Call did that cover, Hope to Carry On, and you know, Derek has talked very fondly about Rich over the years, and so I thought I invited him to talk with me as well. So that's exciting. That's going to be a little bit later on, but before we head into that, we've got our DCT flashback of the week, and since this show's about Rich Mullins, I wanted to go and look at one of his benchmark albums, and this is going to be looking at the album called A Liturgy, A Legacy, and A Ragamuffin Band. So without further ado, here's a Decent Christian Talk flashback of the week.
The Decent Christian Talk podcast flashback.
Rich Mullins was not a stranger to releasing relevant music that resonated with his audience. Mullins penned many songs sang in churches across the country, such as Step by Step, I See You, and Awesome God. Mullins even penned many songs that found themselves played on CCM radio. All of this prior to his release in 1993. In the fall of 1993, Rich Mullins released A Liturgy, A Legacy, and A Ragamuffin Band. Publications such as CCM Magazine and many Rich Mullins fans over the years consider this record his best release.
So hold me, Jesus, 'cause I'm shaking like a leaf. You have been king of my glory. Won't you be my friend?
This record, as somewhat of a concept album, blended timeless musical arrangements with Rich's brilliant transparency about worship and liturgy. The record features many Rich Mullins staples such as Hold Me Jesus, Creed, and Hard. Many other fans will point to favorites such as The Color Green, I'll Carry On, and the Christmas favorite, You Gotta Get Up.
Did my sister get a baby doll? Did my brother get his bike? Did I get that red wagon, the kind that makes you fly? Oh, I hope there'll be peace on earth.
Perhaps maybe more breathtaking than the beautiful backdrops created by hammered dulcimers and wind chimes are the words Mullins used to describe the landscapes in Here in America and Land of My Sojourn.
Saints and children, we have gathered here to hear the sacred story, and I'm glad to bring it to you with my best rhyming and rhythm, 'cause I know that
this record even features How to Grow Up Big and Strong, a Mark Hurd cover. Hurd had just passed away during the making of this record. Oftentimes, a word to describe Rich's music and artistry is legacy. The word legacy is not just part of the title of this record, but it also describes Rich's writings. A liturgy, a legacy, and a ragamuffin band is a great benchmark in a career of timeless releases by the late Rich Mullins. A release that continues to pay tribute to the history of the church, while at the same time challenging the present one. That album is one of my favorite Rich Mullins albums. A lot of times I'll go back and listen to that album and the Jesus record, which was kind of the album that was released posthumously. I go back and listen to those albums several times a year, and they mean a lot to me. That album actually came out, I think, when I was in first or second grade. So that kind of shows what age I am. But you know, a lot of those songs that I remember were written with Appalachia in mind, specifically Land of the Sojourn. You know, a lot of my childhood was driving through Appalachia, and I remember listening to those songs in the back seat of my parents' car, and just, you know, his writings coming to life around me, and I remember that. The back of my parents' car was actually where I found out that Rich had died. We were listening to a radio program one night, and that's how we heard the news. And I'll never forget that. Rich's writings, I mean, there's a lot of people whose songwriting means a lot to me, but Rich, for whatever reason, his writing is just timeless. And throughout this, even though the sands of time continue to fall, his music still resonates with me and with a lot of others. So I was excited to see this Pledge Music campaign. You know, there's a lot of things that we'll be talking about and through the interviews that are going to be made available to you guys through this campaign, including documentaries, never before heard songs from Rich, photography. I mean, there's just a lot of different things that are available. For some of you that have never heard Rich Mullins before, you've got to go and listen. You can go on any streaming music site and listen and check out his writings. And it's really, really something that I go back to all the time. And but that's enough from me. I've talked enough. This is kind of a more of a conversation podcast, and I'm going to get into that right now. We've got two interviews this week. One is with Jimmy Abeg, like I mentioned before. He actually played in the Ragamuffin Band with Rich Mullins. He's, for some of you that know him, is a part of the Steve Taylor and Perfect Foil Band. He's a guy that got to travel the road with Rich. And so I got to talk with him. And right after that interview with Jimmy, we're going to head right into our interview with Derek Webb. Derek is kind of, he's a guy that is involved with Pledge Music and Noise Trade. And when I say involved, I mean he runs the show pretty much. So he's kind of he's not the brains, but he's very vital to this operation. Jimmy's kind of the brains, and Derek's is kind of the technical guy, I guess. And but regardless, we got an interview with Jimmy Abeg and Derek Webb. Hope you guys enjoy.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
Tell me how you got involved with this. I mean, I know obviously your history with Rich, but how did you specifically get involved with this project, and what was the idea behind all of that?
Oh, I had a dream in April last year to do some sort of 20th anniversary commemorative that would just be kind of a raise the flag of excellence to say, man, what a great guy, what a great writer, what a fantastic influence. And that's about it, man. Took it from there. Reached out to a couple of friends to see if they wanted to help me, and some did and some couldn't, so I just took off on my own.
So what I know some of the things that are listed on this project, and I know that one of those is the category of music. What are some of the artists that you got involved that did say yes?
Oh, gosh. You know, I haven't even started asking yet. It was a little premature to do that at the moment because I'm still trying to decide which songs to do and trying to decide which folks would want to collaborate or not. It's going to be tricky because what I'm doing is I'm putting out 10 demos from the early 80s, maybe late 70s. Really, really old material. And in conjunction with that, I want to do 10 songs that are particularly close to the group that I'm working with. I'm working with two other people, Don Donahue, former A&R guy at Reunion, who is Rich's A&R guy and a longtime friend of mine, and Derek Webb, who I just felt like I met him when we shot the Hope to Carry On video for Cademan's Call, and Derek and I have become lifetime friends. So I invited him to help me curate it. Unbeknownst to me, he's doing Noise Trade and Pledge, which was kind of a perfect fit. I did not know that when I reached out to him, but it has come in quite handy because he's got the mechanism to pre-sell this, hopefully to enough people that we can afford to do it really well. Obviously, the music that I choose will be in concert most likely with Derek and Don. We're doing some testing straw polls to see which songs stand out. Obviously, there are some that we can't not do, like The Color Green and Hold Me Jesus, but there are so many songs and only so many slots. I feel like I should just do about 10 songs because we are really not going to have that much money to work with, and it's an expensive process to do it well and to do it right. And I feel like we need to pay attention to getting the book of photography and writing done and the short film with a kind of a music bed behind it of a Mullins medley. I'm I'm really not sure yet what the song selection is going to be, and until I know that, I won't know who the artists are, although I'm getting everyone I run into wants to help, so I don't think it'll be very difficult to find a group of singers. Ultimately, I'd like for this to be kind of an anonymous. In other words, I don't really want to say this big star or that big star is singing on it. I feel like it would be more fun. It's kind of like an Amish barn raising. We can just get together and make some good music and then sing well over the top of it, and maybe the listener can guess who sang it.
Nice. So I know this is probably a hard question, just kind of out of left field, but what is a couple of your own personal favorite Rich Mullins tracks? Because you got to play a lot of them over the years. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have lots of favorites. I love Bound to Come Some Trouble. I love The Color Green. Hold Me Jesus is probably my favorite. Hard to Get. Wounds of Love. A song that not many people are aware of is a song called Madeline's Song.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that one. Man, there's so many. It's also tricky because I'm trying to avoid well-traveled songs. You know, Awesome God's been cut about 1,000 times by 1,000 people.
Right.
Hold Me Jesus is risky because it's been cut a lot. Obviously, Creed, Hope to Carry On, Calling Out Your Name is a personal favorite. I'd like to do that one, but I'm still waiting to see if everybody agrees with that. I could compile a list of 10, probably 10 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, there are some common ones. You know, Hard to Get, Hold Me Jesus, The Color Green. Those, to me, those are bulletproof. Calling Out Your Name.
It is hard to pick one, that is for sure. I've always, you know, I went back and I listened to the Jesus record this past week.
Uh-huh.
And just the demos that he recorded on a tape recorder. After he passed and you guys sat down and listened to that, what went through your guys' head and your hearts when you first heard that after he passed?
Well, you know, I heard that music before he passed.
Right.
Those cassettes were work demos that we were working on to get ready to make a record. The week after he died was the date that we had set to start work on a record here in Nashville.
Mm.
So I was aware of those songs well before they were even on cassette. I mean, when we played that summer prior to his passing, you know, we would be in a hotel room and he would say, "Hey, what do you think of this one?" and run one down. You know, off of that record, I think, you know, He Did Not Have a Home is really a sprightly little tune. My Deliverer is amazing. Gosh, Elijah, believe it or not, is a really, really old song. And Jesus is as well. Jesus, I have a demo of Jesus from, man, I'm guessing around 1979. So
wow.
He was... I've come to discover that he was famous for pulling out a song from, you know, a decade or two before and sneaking it onto the current record. So that's how Jesus came to be on that record. It was a really old song that he wrote in college.
Hmm. A lot of his writings I would describe as timeless because they just kind of transcend time and they still hold up today.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? I mean, you can listen to these songs 20 years later, and they still are relevant today. Why do you think he was able to tap into that?
Boy, that's good mystery. I think if everybody knew that, everybody would be doing it. He just had a way with words. He was a guy that really lived life to the fullest. So he had, you know, as long as he had experiences, he had things to write about, and he had a lot of experiences. So. I think out of that foundation came, he was wise for his age, and I think he was a a pretty deliberate melodist, if you can read that term. Mm-hmm. He had a way with a song that he really knew how to couple lyric imagery with music that was in the ballpark of what the lyrics were about. So that was part of the magic, I think. But at the end of the day, I mean, that's like asking anybody. I think, you know, I hold him up there with Willie Nelson and some others that I think they just seem to have a knack, you know. And I think that in my many years with Rich and multiple inquiries, I was just as curious as the next guy as to where this stuff came from, and he honestly did not know. So I think that's a truism of many writers. And the interesting thing to me is that there may be multiple versions of songs out there. I've been made privy to a cache of probably about 75 songs that have never been recorded. Mm-hmm. And I find snippets of songs that, or I find snippets in songs that later were part of a different song that did get recorded. So I think he used that scrapbook, you know, those demo scrapbooks to compose more fully realized versions of things that he had been working on for years and years.
Wow.
That was kind of surprising to me. I did not know that.
That is awesome to think about, and someone that was that creative. I mean, that kind of doesn't surprise me though, just because of his creativity. If he were alive the last couple of years, I mean, the world has changed drastically since he's passed. What do you think he would write about today?
Well, that's a good question. I have no idea. You know, he was on a road to, like the rest of us, trying to find his place in the world. And I think, you know, in a funny sort of way, I bet you he would be writing the same kinds of things that he was always writing. Mm. You know, Bible centric, but kind of arcing over the human experience. Lots of songs about devotion. Lots of songs about not being good enough. Lots of songs about the dichotomy of, you know, this existence where we're bound by our, you know, we're trapped in our situation, and yet we long for a release by a somehow overarching supreme being that knows better than us how to live. Mm. So I think that theme would not have changed. I think that he was getting really tired of the Christian music business. I mean, I know personally that he was headed for, he wanted to be a teacher. He'd worked very hard to get his degree and his teaching credentials, and he was hand over fist headed for settling down somewhere, probably in the mission field.
I know there's a lot of levels with Pledges. There's photography. There's a documentary that you talked about. There's music. What are some things that you're doing specifically?
Oh gosh, that's hard to tell. I mean, I'm more or less overseeing the whole thing. So, in a way, I'm executive directing the film, the book, and the music. Mm. The music itself, I will produce. Probably with Derek. I've invited Derek to help me, and I've reached out to a couple of other people that we haven't really solidified that yet. We're partly waiting to see how the Pledge thing goes. We're dramatically short at the moment, so what we need to do is generate some steam to pre-sell a lot more of this. Mm-hmm. The last time I looked, I think we're approaching 200 Pledge people, which means at least we've got a couple hundred people that want the music. I don't know of that group. I don't know who's signed up to get a book or the DVD or just the music or all of it. You know, it's kind of, Derek would know better than me stuff like that.
Mm. So
I can no longer navigate the internet. My eyesight is gone, so I'm having to entrust all of those kinds of tasks to what I would refer to as my admin partners.
I understand. I'm getting there too with the internet. I guess one of my last questions would be, I know Rich challenged us a lot through his words and his lyrics. You got to interact with him as a friend. How did he challenge you just through his actions every day, and I guess what I'm asking is, how did that make an impact on your life as a believer?
Oh, well, you know, it was interesting because there wasn't that kind of dynamic in our friendship, really. In fact, there was, in some ways, a safety net or a kind of a neutral zone where we didn't. It seems like a way to answer that would be this: we were both, in some way, in ministry at a professional level, and so when we were not singing or playing or making records or whatever, it seemed like our downtime was spent more on learning how, like, for example, we were learning how to play stringed instruments together. We were trying to figure out how to paint together. I was helping Rich to struggle through that early stages. He really wanted to sketch and draw and paint, and you know, he was very frustrated about it. But it seems to me like that whole challenging one another on the spiritual level, I mean, that stuff occurred more when we were working and less when we were hanging out or touring or goofing off. You know, that stuff, not that there wasn't an overwhelming sense of purpose, but there was not any kind of attempt to, I don't know, egg each other on, let's say.
Sure.
He was very curious about, I was raised Catholic, so he was very curious about my Catholic faith. He was with some diligence looking into converting to Catholicism himself, and that was a topic of discussion quite often. Mm-hmm. I was not interested at all in becoming a Baptist, which is where he came from. So as far as I'm concerned, he had nothing to offer me in terms of the liturgy. I think his efforts as far as the liturgy legacy, and in this case the Ragamuffin Band, I think his efforts were to uncover some ecclesiastical truths that actually arc over every denomination if you're careful to notate where our faith came from. So in some ways, yes, there was probably some challenge to figure out historically where we come from. And then, of course, all of us were against what was soon to become an ever-present social political movement called the evangelical right. We were both astonished that that's how a contemporary American faith was emerging, and it was infuriating not only to me but even more so to him. He was very very pissed off about that.
Yeah, that's what makes me wonder what he would write about today, just because of that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be really curious. He was undecided in a number of areas, but he was also broken enough to know, you know, who was feeding him, and to me that was enough. That he totally inspired me without saying a word, just by the way he lived.
I talked to Jimmy yesterday, and he kind of talked to me about how he reached out to you and about how you got involved. So talk to me a little bit about your end of this project and just why this project intrigues you and why you think it's important.
Sure. So Jimmy is a guy I've known for a lot of years, and he's one of those kind of guys that, you know, when he comes calling, you just say when and where. So when he reached out to me last year and was talking about the 20th anniversary of Rich's passing and wanting to do something really special, you know, I immediately wanted to help any way that I could. And, you know, with my kind of extracurricular work away from what I do as an artist, working with Noise Trade and Pledge Music and, you know, platforms that are actually, you know, that are really designed to help specifically with this kind of thing. Exactly. You know, it just kind of was the perfect, you know, connection for us. And so, and beyond that, beyond the serendipity, beyond my general compulsion towards Jimmy as a character, you know, I was a huge Rich Mullins fan. I mean, he was a huge influence on me as a writer and as a musician, and especially in my early career. You know, my old band that I was in, you know, we used to, you know, one of our big singles early on was a cover of a Rich Mullins song. You know, we did a little work with Rich. He was in the music video for that song. You know, I played with him at a handful of festivals. You know, he was a compelling character. And so any way that I could be connected to it, especially if it was helping my buddy Jimmy with something, I, you know, for sure wanted to do. So a lot of reasons.
How did you and Rich meet?
We met, you know, essentially in those early days of my career in the Cademan's Call days. You know, we were first getting started, you know, this was like early 90s. And we were touring a lot, had songs on the radio and that sort of thing. The way we first met was around his song Hope to Carry On that we had recorded, and it had performed really well for us as a single. And it was a song that we had been playing for years on the road though. And, you know, it was just we kind of did our interpretation of it. And it was just something that our fans really loved. And it was just a song we really loved. And, I remember the first connection we ever had with Rich. We were touring around, radio stations, and popping into a bunch of radio stations, and everywhere we would go, they would tell us that Rich had been there like the week before, you know, and then he started to kind of leave us notes. And so, cause we all kind of figured out that this kept happening. And so he left us a couple of notes at a couple of these radio stations, and we'd get there these guys know what they're doing. These radio guys know what they're doing. And so they would always kind of like, we'd be on the air doing an interview, and they would say, and the song would come up because it was probably the single at the time. And they'd say, well, actually we had Rich Mullins in here last week. And he mentioned, you know, we mentioned to him that we'd have you guys in here and about his song and blah, 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 and how well it's performing. And, you know, he wrote you guys a note, and they'd give it to us right then. And, you know, we'd read it on the air and, you know, whatever. But so we wound up with like we were kind of chasing each other around the country a little bit for a minute there. And then, we had a lot of friends in common, and Jimmy was one of those. He was a guy we had met, and he was traveling around with Rich, a lot at that time and always really, but, and then we, when we went to make the video for that song, we were in Houston, and we got to be friends with some of the guys who were kind of hidden. I think they came known as kind of the new Ragamuffins. It was kind of a younger group of kind of hippie guys who were in his band. And we had hung out with them somewhere and kind of knew some of those guys. And so they were playing a show. We found out that they were happened to be playing a weekend of shows, the same weekend that we were going to be filming this video in Houston, which is where we lived. And so we, by way of them, reached out and got in touch with Rich and said, hey, you know, is there any chance that you'd want to come to Houston and be in the video for your song that we're doing? And he was like, sure. So he drove to Houston and spent the day with us and was in the video, and we got to hang out, you know, the whole day. It was such a blast. And then he, you know, had said, like, coming up in a few months was going to be the Cornerstone Festival in near Chicago. And so, and so we kind of made plans to hang out there, and which we did. And he jumped up on stage with us and played that song. And we hung out that whole day and ran around the festival and did a bunch of stuff. And, you know, and actually we had talked to him at that time about, cause we were playing all, colleges. I mean, like, we were college age pretty much, and we were pretty much, our whole career was playing colleges, and we were telling him how, like, every time we would get up every night, we played that song. A lot of nights we opened with it. Every time we said, we would mention Rich's name or play that song, that everybody went bananas. And he was like, nah, man, college, you know, I'm too old for that. College students aren't into what I'm doing. They don't know anything about my music. And we're like, no, man, like, you wouldn't believe it. Like, people go crazy, you know, like, everybody loves your stuff. And he's like, not kids that young. And they're like, oh no, they really do. And so we had just kind of persuaded him to do a college tour, which he typically played, you know, big churches and kind of older crowds. And so we told him, you know, we persuaded him, and we were like, listen, like, let's do it together. Like, we'll open and you come out and we'll play all these, we'll get you into all these colleges where we play every single year. And now that tour never happened, but it was crazy to be encouraging our hero and be like, no, man, people love you. It's like, he was one of the biggest artists ever in Christian music. But, anyway, so yeah, so that, I mean, that was kind of around that, you know, time that we had all kind of met and connected, was those kind of those early years.
When, you know, this project kind of is a commemoration of his passing about 20 years ago, how did his death affect you both in the short term and in the long term?
Well, you know, he was so unique. He was such a strange character and such a wrench in the machinery of, you know, what's called Christian music as a genre. He was just so unusual, and you could always count on him to have such an unusual and disruptive take and opinion. And, you know, so, and so at the time it was like, you know, and it didn't always come out in his music on his records, but if you got out to see his shows and you knew very much about him, read interviews with him, saw video footage of him, you would get a quick sense that he like took a vow of poverty, you know, like early in his career, and a vow of, you know, it's like he almost lived like a monastic life, but he was also, you know, one of the, you know, he had like a foul mouth, and, you know, would get, you know, stopped in most church parking lots where he was playing for 5,000 people. He'd get stopped in the parking lot because the security or whatever thought he was a homeless guy. I mean, honest to God. And he'd have to convince them to let him back in the church to play his concert. He was late for many concerts for that reason. So he was such a fascinating character, and he was such a disruptive character. And I think we just so resonated with that, like a guy who's that popular, like a guy whose songs are in the literal hardbound hymnals, and yet he's a guy who most of those people would turn their nose up at. It was just the most fascinating thing to see how he carried that. And so you just know when he died, it was just like, that's the end of that. That's not a thing. That's not a thread that gets picked up anywhere else. And it didn't exist before him. I mean, there's a prophetic office that's occupied by just a few people, and each one uniquely. And he was one of those few. And you just knew that it was a loss of that perspective and that voice and that disruption. And so at the time, and honestly, just he was just such a great songwriter. So you just knew that it was just the loss of knowing that you know, him looking at the world and describing it, which is what a songwriter's job is, that was over. So that was really sad. But, you know, thinking about it today, I would just give anything to hear his perspective on what's happening in the world. You know, I cannot imagine what he would be writing and what he would be saying and what kind of trouble he'd be getting into, especially considering he was literally, you know, one of the Holy Trinity of famous Christian artists at the time. It was like Amy Grant, Michael Lee Smith, and Rich Mullins. I mean, you know, he was just, he was one of the biggest artists, you know, most disruptive and yet most eclipsingly commercially successful artists ever in our in the industry. So it's like, I would give anything to hear his perspective on what's happening in the world and what's happening in culture and Christian and otherwise. So anyway, so he's very missed.
You use the word disruption a lot, and I talked to Jimmy about, you know, what he thought Rich would write about today, and I'm curious to know, kind of diving into that further, what was his, and I already know the answer to this, but I want to hear your perspective. What was his perspective regarding the kind of the institutional church, kind of man-made religion kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's so articulate, and he said it so well that, I mean, what I would tell most people is to just go hit YouTube, you know, because he has so many good words about it. But, you know, he didn't trust it any more than he trusted. He trusted all institutions the same, which is none. You know, he didn't like politicians, and he didn't like preachers, at least the ones who acted like politicians, who could be mistaken for people who cared more about the gathering and hoarding of power more than caring about and taking care of people, you know. And he, you know, so yeah, he was hard. He was hard on the church as an institution, and I think rightfully so. And, you know, so, but again, I mean, I would encourage people to, you know, to go and hear it and hear his words on that. You know, he had, I think it's Lufkin, Texas, I think was one of the last shows that was really documented that had a lot of video footage from it, especially in between all the songs. There's just a lot of great monologuing that he did at that particular show. And I think most of it, if not all of it, is up on YouTube. And boy, I mean, it's something it's a rabbit hole I fall down into a couple times a year, watching all of Rich Mullins' footage, and that's the top of the list. So, I mean, I would encourage people to go straight to the source for that.
As someone who rebelled against that church, you know, just kind of falling into that, why do you think he still continues to be timeless? I mean, his writings today are still as relevant as they were 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of the mystery of, you know, the prophetic office. I mean, I think about like interviews I've seen with Bob Dylan where people are questioning him about the things he was writing, especially in his early career and in the early 60s and mid 60s. And when some of his most prophetic, you know, work was being made, and even Dylan would say about himself during that time, that he doesn't know how he did that, and he doesn't know how he was able to write that music, and he doesn't know, you know, and that he can't do it anymore. It's a thing that most people can never do. It never happens to them, and it happened to him for a season. And it's not a thing. He can do other things now, but he can't do that. And I'm you know, I think there's something that Rich tapped into during that time. And I think that in order to really get the full picture, though, you have to, the music certainly does speak to it. But I think even to get the full picture, it really does require, you know, the music and the commentary. I mean, you know, the full experience was seeing Rich perform live and hearing what he was saying between songs and hearing how he was framing it and the risks that he took, and yet how winsome he was about it, and how ironically everybody identified him as their guy. Didn't matter what tradition, you know, you walked into the room coming from, you would think that he probably, and I've heard a lot of people say this, just the way that he did it, you would think that he probably agreed with you, which made you more comfortable hearing him criticize everybody else. But he was pretty equal opportunity. He would eventually offend everybody in the room, and that's kind of what everybody loved about him. But he did it in such a way that was just so endearing and so insightful, and you almost didn't know it was being done to you. You know, he was such just a compelling communicator, and you know, there was just something about him. So,
for those that were fans back in the day, and for some that may have just kind of came along the last 20 years, well, why should they be interested and check this project out?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing I love about what Jimmy is doing is it's not only giving a new window into Rich as an artist, and for folks who have been fans, you know, from 20 years plus, you know, the last 30 years, whatever it's been since he started, even, you know, with a lot of this content and pictures, video footage that no one's ever seen before, you know, that's going to be breathtaking for people who have been fans for a long time to suddenly uncover never before heard songs and images and video footage. And, you know, it's remarkable that these things exist, and that Jimmy is curating them and bringing them to the world is a remarkable thing. And you know, so there's a lot of elements to this campaign that are like that. And they are for people who have been around for a long time and are just super fans of Rich's. But with the other side of it, of, you know, at least the recorded music part of this campaign, you know, there are like these 10 never before heard uncovered songs that are just some of the best you've ever heard from him that no one knew existed, that, you know, that Jimmy is going to release these work tapes. But also it's the, you know, taking some classics that are some of his, that Rich's best, and Jimmy kind of curating those together and bringing, you know, kind of an all-star band of ragamuffins, you know, to record them and to release that music too, is going to give people who maybe never heard Rich's music before a chance, you know, kind of an on-ramp as well. And, you know, and either way, what I love about it is it's honoring and celebrating this guy, and even just the doing of this, and the commemorating at this time is going to draw some attention to it for people who just aren't aware. And they're going to say, like, well, what's the big deal? Why 20 years later are we celebrating this person? And why was he, what was so unusual about him or whatever? And boy, they're going to find out, you know, and it doesn't take a minute to understand and get a sense of what was unique and special and one of a kind about Rich Mullins. And so, you know, so I love everything about this. Yeah.
That was Derek Webb. I'd like to thank him. And right before that was Jimmy Abag. Jimmy's a sweet guy. Actually, when we first started doing this, running our website, decentchristiantalk.com, he was the first interview we ever did, first artist interview we ever did. So he's someone that I've kind of stayed in touch with over the years. And when I saw this project, I had to get him on to talk about it. And thanks to Derek Webb, it's the first time talking to him, and he's a sweet guy as well. I really enjoyed talking to those guys, getting their perspective from someone that I listened to from an early age, Rich Mullins. And We talked a lot about the Pledge Music Campaign in those interviews. If you want to find out more about it, and if you want to contribute and actually get something, you need to head over to pledgemusic.com and search Rich Mullins. It's actually, the web address is actually pledgemusic.com/projects/Rich Mullins. And there's all kinds of things that you can get. Like I mentioned before, there's going to be music. Obviously, there's going to be music. There's going to be all kinds of different other levels, such as photography, documentaries, just a lot of really cool stuff that you can that's being made available to you guys, and I hope you guys take advantage of that. This is something that I think is very important. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about that. I'll let the interview speak for themselves. I'm not really going to talk a whole lot more this week. I'd like to thank you guys for joining me this week on the DCT podcast. If you'd like to hear more from us, if this is the first time you've joined us, thanks for listening. We are on iTunes. Our website is actually decentchristiantalk.com, where we post each and every show. You can go and listen through the archives. We have interviews with Kevin Max, Hillsong United, Thrice for King of Country, Silent Planet for Today, just a lot of really awesome bands. So go and check that out, and if you would like to donate, I know we talked a lot about giving this podcast, but if you'd like to donate, if you like what you hear and you kind of want to support us, click on the right hand side of the website on your laptop and donate a few dollars to us, and that'll help us keep things running and keeps providing that magic for your ears. Otherwise, you can stay involved with us and keep up to track with what we post. Also on the website, you can give us your email address, and every time we post something, you'll get a notification in your email about what we've posted, and that's free to you. We also have an Instagram account, DC Talk Podcast. We have a Snapchat account, DCT Podcast. That's going to get really fun coming up as we go to some shows this summer. Of course, we've got our Twitter account where it all started. That is DC Talk Act 2, and our Facebook group and page, Decent Christian Talk Podcast. We'd really like to make this more interactive. If you like what you hear, go to iTunes and give us a good rating. Subscribe to us on there. That'll help us out as well. And hey, tell a friend about us if you haven't already. You know, we'd like to spread the word about this. You know, if you like what you hear, if you think a friend would enjoy it as well, word of mouth is the best form of telling people what's going on. So we would really appreciate that. We appreciate all of you that have listened all this time. We really are thankful for you guys. Once again, go check out that Pledge Music Campaign, Rich Mullins. And go check out his music. But that's all we got this week. We thank you so much for listening. Peace out. We'd like to thank, well, before we go, we'd like to thank Garrett Godfrey, Carly Jones, Judah Jones, Nathaniel Jones, Josiah Jones, Brennan Gallagher, and everyone else that's listened, Derek Webb, Jimmy Abeg, everyone that made this podcast special. Thank you so much. Peace.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.